WTAD.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome into the Mary Griffith Show on this Wednesday, June 19th, as we're coming up on 9/18. And it is a Wednesday, which means we always get to have some fun and find out some stuff with Laura Sievert from Arts Quincy. Good morning, Laura. Glad you're here.
Good morning.
And you have. We're going to talk about some things that are going on over the next few days, including an event that is coming up this afternoon at Woodlawn Cemetery.
That's right. The Historical Society of Quincy in Adams County is marking Juneteenth today with a graveside ceremony and marker for Emma Koner of Quincy. She was a teacher at Lincoln Douglas School and a civil rights pioneer, and they said not by choice but by circumstance. She was involved in the struggle for civil rights, and they're going to do a nice presentation to talk about her life and mark Freedom Day, also called Juneteenth. It includes a really nice music by the First Baptist Church Choir and remarks from Cecil Weathers and George Cukard. Reverend Dr. Orville Jones, who will speak about Emma's devotion to her church, and Dr. Todd Pettit will discuss her career in education. The American Legion is involved and will add some solemnity to the occasion with a presentation and retiring of an American flag. So a lot of folks going to be there tonight. It's at 4:30 in Woodland, something really special to mark Juneteenth.
It's a really nice event, and if you can get the chance, be sure to stop on by. Now, tomorrow, History Happy Hour.
History Happy Hour. These have been really popular. I've been really impressed with what's going on at the Lincoln Douglas Debate Museum, located right here in Washington Square in Quincy. Faye Dant, who's the founder and executive director of Jim's Journey, the Huck Finn Freedom Center down in Hannibal, will present the program tomorrow night at the Lincoln Douglas Debate Museum. And she's going to discuss slavery on the other side of the Mississippi and then highlight the contributions of Lincoln-era pre-emancipation enslaved people to our area. So love the deep dive into history here and to find out a little bit more about the relationship between Quincy and Hannibal. Faye is an expert, and she does such a good job. So yeah. 5 o'clock with the mini reception, they usually have some little refreshments and things, and then the talk begins at 5:30 with a Q&A, and it's always free and open to the public. And some of these have been getting quite big, so get there early and take a little spot and come and learn a little bit at History Happy Hour.
That's right, 128 North 5th for the Lincoln Douglas Debate Museum. And it's interesting because second half of the show, we'll be talking more about Stephen Douglas, Best Of with Reg Ankrum.
Nice.
Learning more. So get your thinking caps on today, folks. So there you go. And this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, a little event going on in Washington Park.
That's
right. Just a little event.
And it's the 20th year for this little event, which is the Midsummer Arts Fair. So exciting to welcome back Midsummer Arts Fair. 50 artists are poised to make this a great weekend. We've got food vendors and live music all day long, all 3 days. And, of course, a vintage movie at Washington Theater, which has been really popular. They've been doing movies at Washington Theater lately. Live music begins on the 21st with Gypsy Tango Foxtrot at 6:30. Seven local musicians will start at 10 a.m. on Saturday, so lots going on. There'll be hands-on arts activities provided by the Quincy Arts Center, all free. Those are 10 to 1 on Saturday and 11 to 2 on Sunday. QHS Art Club Saturday afternoon, and the budding artists will be there too. Washington Theater is showing Singing in the Rain, so that'll be a fun one to see at an old theater. And all of these activities are free or open to the public. And then, of course, my favorite part of Midsummer Arts Fair is shopping for something new for my home or my office.
Yeah, because a lot of artists will be there with all their wares, different type, and not just paintings on canvas.
Right, absolutely. Last year, I actually bought a really cute little dish for my office. It's like a ceramic hummingbird on a little leaf, and I really loved it, and I put paper clips in it because that's what you do with those kind of things. And the janitor at the Oakley Lindsay Center actually knocked it off my desk, and it broke. So I feel like I need to go back and find something, you know? That sometimes that happens. It was an accident, and so I might go back and find something new for that.
That's an omen. Yeah.
That's a go art shopping omen, and you should definitely go art shopping this weekend at the Midsummer Arts Fair.
Neat thing about this is it's quite a nice economic driver for the Quincy area for not just, you know, this weekend, but also, you know, throughout the year, really.
Absolutely. You know, a lot of the towns around us have very popular and growing art fairs. Bloomington Normal has a really terrific one. And a lot of the artists from Bloomington will do theirs, which was last weekend, and then come to ours this weekend. So we're seeing some of the best artists in the state and the region show up for this stuff. And it absolutely drives both the economy, but then the quality of life here, too. We want to have this sort of stuff and where community can gather music and food and free arts activities and supporting local artists. So it's just a terrific event all around.
Yeah, really is. And coming up next week, there will be a special event, kind of like it's like getting into the gears of things on your side of things, but
yeah.
Yet it's kind of like a way for folks to kind of learn a little bit more about how things go.
Well, that's absolutely right. We are bringing down Jerome Grand, who is the new Western Region Director for the Illinois Arts Council, and he's going to do we're going to do a whole day with him. We're going to tour him around all of Quincy's arts activities and things like that. But the highlight of this and the reason it's on our radio show today is because we want to reach out to individual artists. If you make money through arts whatsoever, and that's art, music, theater, whatever your art form is, it is worth coming to the open house because he's going to talk about some of the state arts programs that you could be involved with and get dollars from, so especially the grant programs. The state just released a big list of all of these grants that went out to individual artists, you know, $15,000 fellowships. There were like 30 of them, and nobody from Quincy got one, and that next year that's not going to be the case. Somebody from Quincy's getting a $15,000 fellowship, or I'm not a good arts director. So I want to make sure everybody's connected with the models and how to apply for this stuff. Jerome's an expert, and he is assigned to our region. So we have a 17-county region, Arts Quincy functions as a hub for that region because it's a lot of rural counties. So if you come on over, you absolutely can hear more about it. 3 o'clock at the Quincy Museum, who's our gracious host. They're going to have some refreshments and things, too. Also, summer youth employment in the arts is also part of this. So if you are affiliated with any of the historical sites around town, it's a good way to hire your docents for the summer. So helping high school and college age students find employment for the summer and get paid for it. So
that's always a good thing.
I'm going to go after an intern. You know, that's right. So, you know, it's good subsidization of that. It'll pay for their whole salary for the summer.
Yeah, it's just another evidence that arts and arts activities are an economic driver for the area, and they always are. They contribute a nice amount of money to the overall business community.
Yeah, we actually just did a study on this not too long ago, and in Quincy alone, we can track about $700,000 in tax revenue per year for the arts in Quincy, and that's rebounded, you know, since the pandemic. So we're seeing that grow, and it's a growing sector, sixth largest employer by sector size. So that's pretty awesome.
That is. That really is. Once again, the IACA Western Region event, Wednesday afternoon 3 at the Quincy Museum. And I'm seeing here on my notes that you can join a webinar if you can't be there in person.
Yep, and we're going to live broadcast it too, so we'll have it on our Facebook page, all the links and things like that. If you want to just tune in, if you're at work or whatever and need to see it later, that's just fine.
Perfect. That sounds perfect. And one thing about coming up this weekend with the Midsummer Arts Fair, and if you're worried it's going to be hot and you're going to be in the sun, well, really, you guys do a really good job of setting up a lot of shade.
Always set up a lot of shade. I think they're going to leave the fountains on. That's what I heard. So, I think there are plenty of ways to cool off. We just had an event last night at Jackson Lincoln Pool, and I know everybody thought it was going to be miserable, but you know, it was actually pretty good. There was a little breeze, and we put up tents and had shade, and it really wasn't bad. And I was running around, so I would know.
Yeah, you would know.
You know, it's summertime in the Midwest. We're hardy people. It's all right. I'm not worried.
That's right. That's
if it's ice, if it's sun, we got this.
That's what we wished for in January, wasn't it?
It is.
Now, Laura Siever with Arts Quincy, always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it.
You betcha. We're coming up on 9:27. When we come back, we'll tell you about the bottom half of the show here on the Mary Griffith Show, sponsored by the good folks here at Refreshment Services Pepsi and Harvest Ridge Coffee here on WTAD. Okay. 9:29 here on the Mary Griffith Show on this Wednesday, June 19th. I'm Scott Hardy in for Mary. Time now for a best of episode of the Mary Griffith Show. Mary talks it over with historian Reg Ankrum of Quincy about his biography of politician Stephen Douglas of Quincy. Of course, Douglas is known as the man who debated Abraham Lincoln, won the U.S. Senate seat in the election in 1858. and of course, had a part to play in the U.S. Senate and was in these Lincoln-Douglas debates, including the one that was held in Washington Park. And now, here is this Best of Mary Griffith segment with Mary and Reg Ankrum.
Reg Ankrum, who's been promising to have a book about Stephen Douglas for a very long time. Mm-hmm. And anyone who thinks it's really easy to write a book and probably takes a couple of weeks and then it's done, no. Reg can tell you that it takes a lot of work to do the research, get the publishing, get the book the way you want it, and you finally have your book on Stephen Douglas, and you're going to do a book signing this weekend. So
yeah,
tell us all about it.
I'm really lucky, and thank you for having me today. I'm doing a book signing Saturday at the Quincy Books at the Quincy Mall. I'm doing a talk. They asked me to do a talk for about 20 minutes before the signing, which will start at 11:30. And the book signing will follow immediately after that. And what I'm going to be focusing on in the talk will be specifics on Douglas and Quincy. And the book signing I'm looking forward to, that will run from about noon till 3 in Quincy Books.
Well, I hope that you're busy the entire time signing books, because I'm not mad that they named Lincoln Park down on the riverfront. I mean, Abraham Lincoln's a great guy.
Yeah.
But we don't have too much around here named after Stephen Douglas. And a lot of people say, why should we? Well, Reg Ankrum is going to tell you that. Many people do not understand that Stephen Douglas, the little giant, the adversary of Abraham Lincoln, was from Jacksonville and Quincy. At least he worked here.
Right.
And so tell us why Stephen Douglas should get more due in this area.
Well, in a nutshell, in his day, he did get that due. And in fact, in that day, the seven great debates, one of which was here in Quincy, were actually called the Douglas-Lincoln debates.
Right.
Yeah.
And we've had revisionist history over time, but he was the guy. In fact, he actually won in the sense that he was appointed the U.S. Senator. So the Lincoln-Douglas debates, as wonderful as Lincoln's speeches were, he didn't win.
He did not win. And what's probably even more interesting about those debates was that Douglas was not only running against Abraham Lincoln in 1858, he was running against the President of the United States, a member of his own party, James Buchanan. Buchanan, who was the 15th president, hated Douglas because Douglas would not agree to allow Kansas to come in as a slave state. There was a requirement in the platform of the Democratic Party to allow people to vote on whether or not their state would become a slave state. And in Kansas, there was a constitution. It was called the fraudulent only because that was the way it actually ended up being. The fraudulent Lecompton Constitution, which no matter how, and Buchanan did not want the whole constitution provided to people. He wanted only two provisions, both of which would have made Kansas a slave state. That violated Douglas's principle, the democratic principle, that people have a right to vote on their institutions. And when Buchanan provided a way that would never happen in Kansas, Douglas fought the President of the United States, and the President of the United States fought Douglas. In fact, came into all the communities of Illinois, fired as many patronage workers as possible, and patronage workers were a very important part of Douglas's election because it was they who, you know, boosted Douglas in their own communities, who then elected legislators who would elect senators. And in that day and age, the Senate, both the House and Senate, elected the senator from each state. So there was a very important part of that. And Buchanan actually sent minions here to Quincy and fired patronage workers, including Austin Brooks, who was the postmaster of Quincy. So Quincy fell victim, too, to Buchanan's wrath at Douglas. So Douglas not only beat Lincoln, he actually beat the President of the United States.
Because Stephen Douglas went on to become the United States Senator from Illinois. And then we all know that, of course, Lincoln eclipsed that. And you would think, well, these men must be bitter enemies, but they were not. And the other thing is, a lot of people, you know, sometimes we tend to be too simplistic about history. Lincoln anti-slavery, Stephen Douglas pro-slavery. That's not true.
Right.
Stephen Douglas was not pro-slavery.
Yeah. In fact, what Douglas said, he could take it or leave it. Douglas viewed politics and his job from a legal perspective, and this was the beautiful difference between these two men. They were greatly different, both heading, I think, in the same direction. Lincoln took a highly moralistic view, and his morals were based on the Declaration of Independence. He said, I never had a political thought that didn't emanate from the Declaration of Independence. Well, what was that? That was a manifesto against Great Britain. It was not law. It was simply a revolutionary document that set the path for our country, given Jefferson's writings about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Douglass believed highly in that declaration, but he believed that what we live under as a society are laws, and the Constitution was created to build our society. It generally was designed to reduce the size of government, keep government at a minimum as people wished it to be. And so he came from a principle of law, and slavery was actually written into the Constitution by the founding fathers. Slavery, we were a slave nation. We started out as a slave nation. Interestingly, George Washington didn't like the idea, but he said, in a quotation, he said it was the best we could do given the circumstances.
Everything had to be a compromise, and, you know, that's why Jefferson owned slaves. Jefferson's not only owned slaves, he had a relationship that had many offspring. Now mm-hmm. we know, mm-hmm. you know, the Sally Hemings and her family. So it's very complex, and we tend to look at things in the 2015 lens. And so, yeah, Stephen Douglas was not for slavery. Again, a lot of people say the Civil War was fought. Was it fought over slavery, or was it really fought over states' rights? And indeed, and I only know this because of talking with Reg Ankrum, so don't say, oh, Mary Griffith is such a Douglas scholar. No, I'm just regurgitating things Reg has told me over the last 5 to 10 years.
And you hope I'm right.
And I pray you're right. And I'm sure your book is right. But Lincoln used Douglas as an envoy and emissary to the Southern cause in the Civil War, and Douglas was very important in trying to hobble back together the Union.
Yeah, both men, both Lincoln and Douglas, believed that this Union was a contract of the states. This was a federal government, which meant states were sovereign. They had as much importance as the federal government. In fact, the federal government, from the standpoint, the viewpoint of Southerners, was even less important than the states. That was a key issue. And they both believed that this was a contractual relationship, this federal government. Any state, both men believed, under the law, had a right to go out. But because they had a contract with all the other states, they had to get the approval of the other states to break the contract. The South didn't do that.
No.
Lincoln, even at the beginning of the Civil War, said that to the South and tried to lure them with a 13th Amendment. You know, this. I love symmetry in history, and one was that there was a 13th Amendment when the Civil War began, and there was a 13th Amendment at the end of the Civil War. They both did exactly opposite things. The first 13th Amendment, introduced in early 1861 by a Kentucky senator, Crittenden, would have made slavery permanent in this country, and it would have been an amendment that could never be changed, could never be amended. What that means was, if Lincoln had, and Lincoln supported that just to keep the country together at the time, it would have meant that today we would have slaves around us. Okay. Now, at the end of the Civil War, the 13th Amendment, sponsored by Illinois and Lyman Trumbull, said that slavery would no longer be permitted in this country. And it was ratified very quickly, thanks to Abraham Lincoln, who pushed for the 13th Amendment and would have submitted himself to the first 13th Amendment. So
and
symmetry,
indeed, Lincoln, yeah. When, quote, Lincoln freed the slaves, he only freed the slaves in the South, in the Confederacy where they were fighting against us. Lincoln did not free the slaves.
Right.
If you had a slave and you lived in Virginia, or you lived in, you know, Massachusetts, or you lived in New York and you owned a slave, it was your property, and he didn't free those people.
Well, the fact was the Emancipation Proclamation freed no slaves, even in the South. What I think history or we who read history fail to recognize is that there was a second piece of that, which had been set up just a few months earlier, called, it was actually the Second Confiscation Act. And what that provided, enlistments of young men to fight the war were going down, and there were actually riots in New York, for example.
Not everybody was picking up the flag and marching off freely.
Yeah. You know, the war was expected to last maybe 90 days, and the first battle of Bull Run, you know, people were taking their lunches 20 miles or so from Washington to watch this great battle, and they saw the Union lose. And so the expectation that it would be very short ended up being wrong. It was very long, cost almost 700,000 young men. But what happened was that second part of the Emancipation Proclamation, which not part of the Emancipation Proclamation, but it allowed African Americans to join the Union Army. And there was a great discord about that as well. But the fact was it supplemented with about 180,000 African-American young men who joined the Union forces to help. And one of those was from here in Quincy, the First Illinois Colored, it was called, became part of the Union Army and fought with Grant at the Battle of the Crater. A tremendously heroic effort by those young men from here.
And that, again, the First Illinois Colored,
yeah,
from right here in Quincy.
Yeah, recruited here in Quincy. In fact, it was the only Illinois African-American regiment during the Civil War, and it was at the behest of people like Orville Browning and John Wood and others who saw what was going on and suggested, you know, we really need help.
If we want to get some motivated people, let's turn to the people who will be most motivated to end,
yeah,
slavery in our country, and that would be the, yeah, African-Americans.
And even then, people were so upset about that. Lincoln ultimately said, in a letter to James Conkling in Springfield, said that you don't want Negroes to fight for you. You know, if you don't want that, don't worry about it. Just don't think about it. You don't have to fight for them. Let's fight for Union. And so Lincoln, you know, turned that twist around to suggest that these people will help us save our own country.
Okay. Well, again, we end up talking about Abraham Lincoln when the focus should be on Stephen Douglas. And this really, I'm sure, Reg, as you've been researching and writing this book over the many years, Stephen Douglas is certainly not forgotten in history. But again, if we were able to take a snapshot of what people's sentiments were back during those Lincoln-Douglas debates, for example. Remember we had the reenactment a few years ago?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody wanted to have a Lincoln banner. Everybody wanted to be for Lincoln. And you and others from the Historical Society are like, folks, the vast majority of people here would have been for Stephen Douglas.
Right.
He is our man. He,
yeah,
lives here.
Yeah.
We would not have been for Abraham Lincoln. Now, hindsight's 20/20, you know,
yeah,
blah, blah, blah. He's a big hero. The assassination, I mean, I'm not being rude. The assassination helped Abraham Lincoln because it ended him at a finite point. He didn't have to go through Reconstruction and all this.
Mm-hmm.
That heroic death, people say, you know, assassination, John F. Kennedy, Abraham Lincoln, people who die a heroic death are always a hero then,
mm-hmm,
you know, for,
yeah,
the for all infamy. So, but Stephen Douglas, let's talk a little bit about his roots in the Jacksonville, Quincy area. Who was Stephen Douglas and why did he come to our community and what did he do here? He was quite prominent.
Yes, for his entire life, I mean, from the time he was able to think, he started thinking about Stephen Douglas and thinking about Stephen Douglas in terms of what was around him. And he, at the age of 20, got to Jacksonville only to see the place that was named for his hero, Andrew Jackson. He had no intention of staying there. But he had left New York and started, actually went to Ohio and then ultimately came to Illinois. He wanted to be a lawyer at 20 years old, and he found out that in New York, well, he knew in New York that you had to have 7 years of classical and legal studies. He found out Ohio required only 1 year, so he immediately went for Ohio, fell deathly ill, and when he recovered, he had learned Illinois required no training.
That's
which
why Abraham Lincoln was able to become a lawyer.
Yeah, and so he came here within a few months, you know, and there was much struggle about it, but he did become a lawyer. The Whigs, who today would be, you know, the Republican Party,
Republicans.
And they were in 1856. The Whigs were going to run him out of business because the Whigs controlled Morgan County, and Douglas showed them that a little giant, which was he was named such by the people of Jacksonville, the little giant showed him and the other 10 Whig lawyers that wasn't going to happen. And in fact, he wrote a bill that kicked out of office the state's most powerful Whig, John J. Hardin, who happened to be the shirt-tail relative, the nephew of Henry Clay, who created the Whig Party along with James Madison and Daniel Webster and others, kicked Hardin out of office and gets himself appointed at the age of 21, the chief prosecutor in the state's largest judicial district. So that's how he started. And every move he made was a similar move where, you know, what served the people happened to serve Stephen Douglas. That's how he got to Quincy, in the most unabashed, unshamed, just an incredible piece of brazen work. He wrote a bill to pack the Illinois Supreme Court. The guy's 26 years old at the time, actually 27. 27 years old, he writes a bill. The Supreme Court was four members, three Whigs and one Democrat. Douglas writes a bill that makes it nine members. And, of course, the governor, Thomas Carlin from Quincy, appoints five Democrats. So now it's made up of six Democrats and three Whigs. And Douglas, who actually controlled Thomas Carlin also, got Carlin to appoint him to Quincy. And the reason was there were several thousand new votes just north of here in a place called Nauvoo,
right,
that Douglas, having served for only 3 months, who got the governor to appoint him for only 3 months Secretary of State so he could sign the charter for the city of Nauvoo, and Joseph Smith now loves Stephen Douglas. So Douglas was counting on all those new votes just north of here to become elected to his main goal, which at the time was to become a congressman. And it was a goal that with the help of Quincy and the region here, he kept.
Okay. My guest today is Reg Ankrum. The name of his book is Stephen A. Douglas, The Political Apprenticeship, 1833 to 1843. So this is the early life of Stephen Douglas, which begs the question, is a sequel in the works?
I'm working on two more, believe it or not.
Well,
I hope they don't take as long.
I was going to say, I'm retiring from here in about 12 years, Reg. I'd love to have you back on the show.
You may see the first of
If I could save time in a bottle, the first thing that I'd like to do is to save every day till eternity passes away, just to spend them with you. If I could make days last forever, if words could make wishes come true, I'd save every day like a treasure, and then again I would spend them with you. But there never seems to be enough time to do the things you want to do once you find them.
Time in a Bottle, Jim Croce, and we're time in a bottle here. Stephen Douglas, Quincyan, decided to move to Illinois for the greatest of all reasons. You could avoid law school. People often say, you know, how did you become a lawyer back in the olden days? On the East Coast, you had to study at, you know, they had a lot of formal training and people overseeing you. Out here, just like Abraham Lincoln did, just like Stephen Douglas did, if you were really smart, you could read, you could apply that knowledge, you could be admitted to the bar by your peers, and you didn't have to go to law school, and that's what Stephen Douglas did. So he becomes a U.S. congressman from Quincy. You have in your book a quote, "Douglas and Lincoln have known each other for quite a time. In fact, they courted the same woman, Mary Todd." Some people say, you know, again, this is up for debate, but if she had married Stephen Douglas would have been president. She pushed Abraham Lincoln into the presidency. Her sheer force, you know, and she was kind of politically well-connected. She was from the South, so that took away some of the sting, you know, that he was a Yankee and all this. So read from this passage what Lincoln and Douglas, you know, had reaction to each other, I guess.
Yeah, this was Lincoln 22 years after he first met Douglas. He said, 22 years ago, Judge Douglas and I first became acquainted. We were both young then, he a trifle younger than I. Even though we were both ambitious, I perhaps quite as much as he. With me, the race of ambition has been a failure, a flat failure. With Douglas, it has been one of splendid success. His name fills the nation, and it is not unknown in foreign lands, which was true.
Yeah, he was so much more. And I forget what question I was going to ask you. We talked during the commercial breaks. Reg has educated me so much about Stephen Douglas. Talk a little bit, though, about they were not necessarily as big adversaries, like I said, as some people might have thought. In fact, when you're in a storm, anybody that's got a skiff is your friend. And when Abraham Lincoln became president, he didn't turn his back on the guy who would have liked to have had the office instead of him. He knew that Stephen Douglas had some great ambassador-type skills. And so let's talk about that relationship and what Stephen Douglas did for Abraham Lincoln when it came to relationships between the rebel South and the Union North.
Yeah, actually, the thing Douglas did was to go South. He knew, Douglas knew early in the campaign that he would not win the presidency, and his belief was that Abraham Lincoln would. There were actually four candidates at the time, but Lincoln and he were the two primary candidates. And Douglas had started the campaign believing he could get the election thrown into the House of Representatives, where he believed he had a better chance of winning. He did not believe he could win the popular vote or win enough electoral votes because he was a Northerner, just as Lincoln was. And the South was definitely not going to be voting for any Northerner. So the result was Once he determined that he was just not going to win, and he determined that just before November of 1860, when the state contest, the statewide offices were elected in, that was either August or October, a month or two before, and the Republicans won all over the North. And so Douglas became convinced that Lincoln would win the election. And so what he did, instead of just giving up and throwing up his hands, he turned to the South, and he campaigned in the South, not for himself, but for Union. Much to his great credit, and Lincoln was very obliged to him. Lincoln, Douglas, when he got to D.C. after Lincoln had gotten there in February of 1861, was reluctant to go see Lincoln. He thought Lincoln probably wouldn't want to talk to him, but Lincoln sent for him, and they had a 2.5-hour talk. Douglas pledged his loyalty. He said, "I will be the loyal opposition, just because, you know, we're both in the same state. You beat me, and I'm not sure how close friends they were, but they had a friendly relationship. Does not mean that I will not oppose you on issues that I believe are wrong." And so he pledged his loyalty, but also pledged the loyal opposition. And Lincoln was satisfied with that. Lincoln asked Douglas what he thought about raising 75,000 troops. Douglas said, "You better make it 250. I know these people."
Oh, yeah.
And Lincoln did not. He believed also it was going to be a short term, if there was war at all. So they had a close relationship. The interesting thing was Douglas dies right at the beginning of the Civil War, and if you believed, as Lincoln did, that there was an invisible hand operating in history, you know, it was Douglas who kept the country together. All the great orators, the great compromisers, Henry Clay, John Calhoun, Daniel Webster had died, and it was Stephen Douglas who was left to carry the mantle from that point until the beginning of the Civil War. So he made the compromises to keep the South in until a Republican was elected, and they went out. Douglas dies in June of 1861, just a few months after Lincoln takes office. And then Lincoln, of course, dies at the end. Another great symmetry of history, the man who held the Union together, and then Abraham Lincoln who saved it.
What would have happened, because Stephen Douglas was in ill health and passed away, and this is all, you know, hypothetical, but what would have happened if Stephen Douglas had been in more vigorous health and had lived?
You know, it's really hard to say. All I can do is say that the person who took, who later replaced
who filled that
him,
role?
Yeah, Orville Hickman Browning was much more, well, obviously in the same camp as Abraham Lincoln. He was a Whig, and then with Lincoln, and then in 1856, both became Republicans. And Browning was very supportive of Lincoln, who himself acknowledged that he was violating the Constitution, but as Lincoln would say, you know, am I to let the Union dissolve because I simply refuse to break one part of the Constitution? You know, the Union was more important to him than just one or two laws or constitutional articles. And so Lincoln, much as Jefferson thought in 1803 when he took the Louisiana Purchase, he didn't have the authority to do it.
Right.
Douglas would have fought that as a loyal opposition without any question.
You know, it is so funny. We talk today and we cuss and discuss our current presidents and maybe our previous presidents and our future possible presidents, but there is no politician who's not willing to break the Constitution when it's for their own benefit. And Abraham Lincoln and his thing with the railroads, I mean, there's all kinds of things. Now, let's Stephen Douglas. There's a critical case in Quincy. A lot of people know about it. We have a Richard Eales house here because Eales, an abolitionist, he helped fugitive slaves. And again, maybe one of the reasons that Stephen Douglas gets painted with the pro-slavery brush, which he was not, is because of this case in which he was adversarial, but he was defending the law at the time. Give us a 2-minute recap of that Eales case and Douglas's involvement in it.
Yeah, real quickly, Eales was caught with a fugitive slave, and Illinois and the federal governments both had fugitive slave laws, which said if you caught a slave, you had a direct obligation under the law to see that slave was returned to the owner.
It was property. You
yes.
couldn't take a guy's mule, and you couldn't keep his slave, even if he got over to Quincy and asked for refuge.
Right. So Richard Eales had harbored or was taking this slave to the Mission Institute at 24th and today 24th and Main, that area, and he was caught. And he was taken to before Judge Henry Asbury, actually a justice of the peace, and the justice held him over for trial. The trial was held in the courtroom of Stephen Douglas. It was a jury trial. It was the jury of his peers who found him guilty. And Douglas assessed a fine of $400, which was half the value of a slave. And Eales, and then later his executor, a guy named Thomas Moore, appealed those decisions all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. And the Illinois Supreme Court and the U.S. Supreme Court upheld Douglas's decision because he was simply interpreting the law as it was written. And I don't want to minimize the fact that, you know, because there were a lot of people who believed Douglas was wrong in doing that. The fact was he was correct. It went all the way to the Supreme Court. That decision has never been overturned, although last year Dr. Eales was exonerated from that decision and was recognized as doing really the morally right thing. And
civil disobedience, in other words. You know,
exactly.
It's kind of like letters from a Birmingham jail for Martin Luther King Jr.
Yeah.
I mean, these things all have a prism of time. Things that are happening now, we can only see in the eyes of now. And we'll look at these things 100 and 200 years ago from now, and then we'll only see them in the prism of our eyes then, mm-hmm. which is why I applaud your campaign to bring more merit and note to Stephen A. Douglas, because there's a lot of misconception about him. For that case, for example, well, the judge, you know, ruled, let them, you know, that was, he must be pro-slavery. No, he was not. He was upholding the law at the time. And so it's very intriguing. So, folks, you really need to read the book. You need to spend some time with Stephen A. Douglas. I think it's really, to me, it ought to be required reading for every child in the Quincy public school system, because how are you going to know about the greats of our town if we don't talk about them? And I imagine if you went out and did a, you know, Jay Leno street walking thing, you know, mm-hmm. and asked people, Stephen Douglas from Quincy? No, I've never even heard of him. So we've got a lot of work to do. But Reg is helping with his book. This book is just the early years of Stephen Douglas. More are coming. He'll be giving a talk at 11:30 Saturday at Quincy Books in the Quincy Mall. And then from noon to 3 this Saturday, he will be signing his book, Stephen A. Douglas, The Political Apprenticeship. Now, this is the early years of Douglas. He and Lincoln were in each other's wheelhouse. You know, they knew each other. Certainly, they were in the same power broker